Hey, welcome to our podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me John Harpole. He is the president of Mercator Energy, and obviously energy, oil, and gas has been in the headlines with the Russians and Saudis trying to flood the market, and of course with the coronavirus, Wuhan virus disruption, there's not been as much demand for energy. And so we wanted to have a conversation with John Harpole to try to get an understanding of what is going on and how that might affect our independent energy producers. So John Harpole, thank you so much. Welcome to the podcast.
Kim, thanks so much for having me.
So tell us a bit about Mercator Energy. What do you do exactly?
We're a Denver-based company. I've been in business for about 26 years now. And prior to forming Mercator Energy, I worked as a natural gas buyer for an oil and gas company located here in Denver that was owned by General Electric. So in the early 90s and quite honestly the late 80s, I was traveling about 150,000 miles a year to General Electric plants, primarily all over the East Coast, showing them how to purchase natural gas from their sister company in Denver rather than from a utility. These were large industrial plants, plastics plants, railroad, automotive, GE lighting, probably about 60 plants located east of the Mississippi. So it gave me a great view on the energy landscape and the unfolding deregulation of natural gas in the U.S.
So energy has been on certainly in the headlines right now. And as we have been in this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption, John Harpole, I've realized that a reliable, affordable, and efficient energy, we as Americans have taken a lot of things for granted. And we may still be taking energy for granted because our lights have turned on, we've had heat, and we really appreciate that. But there's things that are happening out there in the geopolitical landscape that has me concerned about our independent producers here.
Well, your concern is valid. I think to try to set the stage, I think it's important to understand that thanks to the U.S., energy is now superabundant. And for me, the key element in that superabundance is the fact that we are the only country in the world that has private property ownership of minerals, where you and I can go out and buy a farm and we have below ground minerals, and we can actually take those minerals and lease those to an oil and gas company. And that's unique in the world, and I believe it's that combination of that unique nature of private property ownership of minerals and the arm's length transaction by so many independent oil and gas producers over the last 12 years with those mineral owners that created this superabundance that we have in energy right now that's very, very obvious now because, quite frankly, we have too much oil with nowhere to put it.
It's astounding. I want to just go back and unpack just a little bit more. You said arm's length transactions in conjunction with private property rights has been one of these things that has given us this abundance. What do you mean by arm's length transactions?
I'm a native of Denver, third generation native of Denver. I attended the University of Colorado and received a degree in the business school with an emphasis in mineral land management. So I was an oil and gas land man in the late 70s, early 80s, where I would actually go out, check county records, find the mineral owners in a specific county that my geologist might be interested in, and I'd go out and negotiate an oil and gas lease with the owner of those minerals so that my company at that point in time could go out and explore for oil and gas on that mineral interest property.
Okay. Now, can the mineral rights be split off from the actual physical property?
Absolutely. You've seen that in the past where a number of landowners, and more specifically in the DJ Basin or Weld County, Colorado, when they sold off the surface, they would retain their own mineral ownership interest. So we call that in the industry a split estate. But again, what's unique here as compared to, let's say, as a specific example, China, there's no vested interest in the community in parts of China to see oil and gas development. And it's one of the major issues for PetroChina, at least in Sichuan Basin, where they literally have people in the Sichuan Basin, farmers who oppose any kind of oil and gas exploration because, again, there's no vested interest, whether it's a severed mineral interest owner like what we have here or an owner that owns the surface and the mineral estate. And I really think, Kim, that that's the unique nature of what goes on in the U.S., and that's the unique attribute to our capitalistic structure in a sense where we compete against national oil companies on a worldwide basis.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about this severed interest, though, John, before we move on. And that has created some challenges as the Front Range has brought in more population because there's people that are, quote-unquote, well, they are, they're surface owners. And many times when a mineral rights owner might want to exercise those rights, the surface owner has said, oh, I didn't understand, I didn't know about that, and it's created a rub. So explain what should happen there
I think
John Harpole.
Every purchaser of a property should understand exactly what they're purchasing. And if they don't buy the mineral interest along with the surface, they should understand that that mineral interest owner has a right to extract the minerals below that surface. And so it's really an education system that I think could be helped by better education amongst real estate agents, frankly. But the reality is the buyer should understand whether or not they're buying surface and minerals. And if they're not, that mineral interest owner has what's called a primacy right to actually explore and produce the minerals below that surface.
So in essence, then, the two should work together.
They work together.
Neighbors, and right?
I think, Kim, that, you know, if you look back on Weld County, Colorado, over the last 100 years, I think one of the first wells was drilled in Weld County 100 years ago. Weld County, Colorado, is one of the largest agricultural counties in terms of production in the U.S., and it's one of the largest oil and gas production counties in the U.S. And those two groups of people have coincided or have lived side by side for 80 to 100 years. I think they've coexisted for 80 to 100 years. I think a lot of the rub is the kind of radical environmentalists that try to stoke the fires and create more to the rub than is necessary. And that's never been more true than what we saw, you know, years ago in 2018. We had an option before all the voters in the state of Colorado to reduce the distance that you could have between a well, a drilling well, a well to be drilled, and a house or school. And voters in Colorado voted that down in November of 2018 by a vote of, I think, 68%. And yet 4 months later, two Democrat legislators out of Boulder sponsored a bill, Senate Bill 181, that in parts of it actually allowed for a de facto moratorium of oil and gas. And so the issue between, or the potential issue between surface and mineral owners has been radicalized by so much of the legislation that's been passed in the state. I've got a favorite saying that it's called Hanlon's Razor, and it's never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. The Senate Bill 181 was not a stupid bit of legislation. I think at its heart, it was malicious. And it's affected the oil and gas community here in Colorado even before this glut of oil, to the point that there was a survey done by a Canadian think tank back in late 2019 that ranked the attractiveness of a variety of oil and gas communities or states for investment. And they looked at 20 different areas, and sadly, Colorado was the least attractive in terms of potential investment and finished 20 out of 20. That's not the reality that I faced when I graduated from CU Boulder. You know, it was one of those that the two communities coexisted in Weld County. The two communities coexisted across the state in terms of farming, ranching, agriculture, and oil and gas. And this is really something that's just come to a head and come to a reality, I think, over the last 15 years.
Well, you know, and I saw that recently Ocasio-Cortez, the representative from New York, had been somewhat gleefully excited about this glut of oil and what that might mean to our independent energy producers, which, you know, makes it very difficult when you have a product and there is so much of it that the price continues to go down. And so it concerns me that there are those that are somewhat happy about this, but I don't think they've really thought about it, at least not here in Colorado, because my understanding, John Harpole, is that the oil and gas industry has provided significant tax revenues to the state of Colorado that have been used for things such as schools and roads and different things like that. And so when you use policy to, or in this case legislation, Senate Bill 181, to make it more difficult for an industry to work in a particular state, and as you mentioned, Colorado ranked 20 out of 20, you're going to start to see investment in that industry move to other states. What's that going to do to the Colorado budget and how the things they want to spend money on?
Well, let me kind of unpack some of that. So our self-described democratic socialist, AOC or Ocasio-Cortez, her direct tweet was, "You absolutely love to see it." And that was in response to the oil price meltdown that occurred on Monday, where we saw crude oil futures for West Texas Intermediate trade below $38 a barrel. Negative numbers, first time ever. So I think people like AOC see this oil crisis as a political opportunity, which is really sad when you think about the number of families, specific families that it affects and impacts. And you've got also a group of about 40 Democrats in the House right now that are arguing the fossil fuel companies should not be able to receive any assistance under the coronavirus relief package passed by Congress. So people actively campaigning, seeing this devastation of one of the critical energy or critical industries in the U.S. as a political opportunity. And they really need to think about it. If you talk about tax revenue, just in Weld County, in 2018, I'll read this from some notes that I've got here. So there's no sales tax in Weld County. And so property taxes are primarily the place where they get their revenue. 64% of the property taxes in Weld County came from oil production, 64%. And yet we're seeing a total devastation, specifically in the DJ Basin, because they produce in the heart of that basin kind of a light sweet crude that's from most of the time is used for gasoline, refined by refineries and used for gasoline. There's no gasoline demand right now. We have seen worldwide demand for oil drop by 30%. And so again, to try to unpack that, the world produces about 100 million barrels per day of oil. 30% demand destruction in the last 2 months across the world. And so this devastation on the energy industry right now, I don't think should be celebrated, because it's going to come back to affect counties like Weld County and their ability to build new roads and to maintain schools or even build new schools.
So ultimately, if this happens, for example, in Weld County, they're either going to have to reduce services, which probably will with a significant drop, but they may be trying then to increase taxes, and that's going to be very difficult for what has been happening to everyday hardworking Coloradans, with many of them on furlough or losing their jobs or their businesses closed right now. So it's a double-edged sword on this, John Harpole.
It's really sad. I spoke with Chris Wright, who is the founder of Liberty Fracking Services, and actually my right-hand person's husband is one of the frack team leads for Liberty. They have laid off nearly half of their employee staff, and they provided such a good job, such a good employment to those folks, that Chris was telling me 20 to 25 of the people that he laid off actually sent him thank you notes for creating a job that was one of the best jobs that they had ever had in their lives.
Wow.
I think we need to look at the impact on these families. It's a tragedy. Think about Texas, where 15% of the economy for the state, roughly 15%, comes from oil and gas. or Louisiana where it's 30%. It's not just Colorado that's being affected by this, and the real concern is, what's the depth and breadth of this recovery? How soon might we recover? And I think the real question is, when you look at the rate of infection of this virus, it's less than 5% across the world. And so when we reopen things again, how quickly will we see the numbers climb again? And so this recovery that I hope and pray for the oil and gas industry, we're wondering, will it be an 18-month recovery or a 36-month recovery? And that really depends. Are we going to be at 93 million barrels a day of demand when we exit this virus? Or are we going to be at 96 million barrels a day of demand? And that 3 million to 4 million day of demand and difference, Kim, may cause the recovery to extend another year, year and a half for all of us. So it's the unknown future that and the depth and length of this demand destruction that's just causing so much uncertainty in our business. That uncertainty will be reflected in the taxes collected by all these counties and states across the country. And so the pain at the county level may not be felt for a year. But it's a tragedy. It's sad.
It is really sad. And so we had two things going on. It's amazing they both happened at the same time. And that was this, you know, with the COVID-19 and shutting down all the businesses, obviously the demand went down. And just about at the same time, Putin with Russia and the Saudis got into I probably can't say what I was really going to say,
but a match.
Yeah, a match. Yes. And so we have them, you know, flooding the market with oil. We've got the demand is going down significantly, and it's really going to be, I think, hurting our producers. And here within what, the last 10 years or so, we became a net exporter of energy. Back in the 80s when we were dependent on the Middle East, I mean, we kind of were beholden to them because we needed the energy. And here, with creativity and innovation and horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing,
we have
become independent. And so address that a little bit. What's that going to mean for our Rocky Mountain producers?
Well, this is no doubt a self-correcting mechanism where the high-cost production will be eliminated. And there's, again, no question that we're going to see a consolidation. We know that a lot of very, very good ideas were probably overinvested in over the last 10 years. And so initially, a lot of these oil and gas companies received equity investments, just pure cash equity investments. But later on, the last few years, they've relied on bond options and high-yield instruments. So to give you an idea of what I mean by the self-correcting mechanism, there are companies who have a debt-to-equity ratio that operate right here in Colorado. That means that their books are highly levered. And imagine, there are different estimates on this, but the bonds that are out there on some of these companies mature in the next 3 to 5 years. And they range from anywhere from $110 to $200 billion of bonds, where some of these bond structures have keep-whole language saying that, look, if oil prices drop dramatically, you've got to come up with the cash to pay this bond off. So we're going to see a round of bankruptcies on the highly levered companies, and that'll be the second tranche of pain beyond just the pain of having to shut in and lay people off. So the investment is tough for those folks that have invested specifically in Colorado because of the regulatory environment, but it will be made even more tough now by the fact that we have too much oil and nowhere to put it.
So when we were preparing for this, you had mentioned it was something, though, going on with Russia. It's like the Putin versus the Permian. Expound upon that a little bit, John Harpole.
Well, I'd expand on that now and just say it's the pandemic and Putin versus the Permian. So imagine the Permian Basin is what one friend called kind of a tiramisu of oil and gas formations that you can drill in, and it's one of the most prolific. It is the most prolific basin, oil and gas producing basin in the U.S. right now. There might be a silver lining for Rockies natural gas producers in the story, so bear with me here. The when you produce oil in the Permian Basin, you produce associated gas. And the same goes for parts of the DJ Basin, and the same goes for the Bakken up in North Dakota. And so when those producers have to start shutting in because there's nowhere to put their oil, the associated gas with that oil production will disappear also. Now, that associated gas out of North Dakota and the DJ and the Permian Basin has been competing with, let's say, dry natural gas production in western Colorado and parts of Wyoming and Utah. When that associated gas comes off the market, I think we'll see a much higher price for natural gas across the board. And so it's not just the entire oil and gas industry that's been devastated. Now, this is supported by the notion that we've seen a drop in the number of frac crews across the country, so that if it stays static right now, we'll be at about 60% drop across the country for the rest of, for this average for this year, an incredible drop. And so think about those frac crews and the homes that have been affected by people that have been laid off within those frac crews. When you follow this through, I can see a future as early as next winter where our home heating bills are higher, but it may be cheaper to drive to the store because crude oil is still in the ditch. So you really have to take a look at the macro outlook of this thing. It may be good for some producers in western Colorado. That remains to be seen. But the devastation in this finely balanced global economy that's balanced on energy is the devastation cannot be overstated.
Oh, it's a time, John Harpole. It's just a time that we're living in right now. But you had mentioned also when we were preparing for this that there is this shining light on our shale production, and also the fact that we have private property, mineral rights, that those things are so inherent in the American idea, and that government is not as efficient as the free market. So just talk a little bit about those three things, how they interrelate.
So I think it's important to remember much of our life and our cost of energy in our lives, Kim, has been dictated by a cartel, by OPEC. But we realize with this shale revolution and with this creation of superabundant energy in the U.S. that that cartel is not omnipotent, which is beautiful. And I don't think that this discussion gets enough play, in that it's the capitalistic approach, it's the private property ownership of minerals that has set us apart and allowed us to create, unique to any other country in the world, the shale revolution that's caused energy to be super abundant. I don't mean to degrade the U.S. Postal Service, but imagine that mentality running a national oil company and then trying to compete with the efficiency of an independent oil and gas operator that's a publicly traded company down in the Permian Basin or the DJ Basin. Imagine the efficiency that our system works out in the process versus the inefficient national oil company that's trying to hang on to short-term and long-term market share. You know, I just don't think that they can compete with us. And so, but the problem is that that socialistic approach to oil and gas production can bury the high cost of production as it compares to the Permian Basin and possibly outlive some of our independence. So we're going to see a consolidation in the U.S., no doubt. There are going to be bankruptcies across the board, but other companies will step in. And this efficiency that we have attained here that's helped us create this energy superabundance, this thing we call the shale revolution, I don't think can be competed. There's just no competition between the U.S. cost of production and these other international companies that are run like a socialistic state.
Okay. Well, John Harpole, we're just about out of time. What would be the final message that you would like to leave with our podcast listeners today?
Appreciate your energy. Appreciate and understand where it comes from. Electricity doesn't come from the wall. Really dig into this and realize that the family that's affected by this crisis in our industry right now is no less deserving of your grace or approval or praise than the family of a blue collar worker that is involved in any other industry. there are some tremendous people in this industry. Imagine in the Chris Wright Liberty Fracking example, where you're laid off, but you so much appreciated that employment that you sent a thank you note. Those are the kind of people we have in this industry.
Well, John Harpole, as we've gone through this this disruption here, I've realized that the real heroes are, just as you mentioned, the hardworking, everyday people that go to work every day, our truck drivers, our energy producers, the grocery store clerk, and the people that stack our shelves. I've come to a real appreciation for that everyday, hardworking American that gets up and they do their job and they do it well. So John Harpole, President Mercator Energy, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate you shedding light on a lot of this stuff that's going on in our energy markets right now.
Thank you, Kim, and take care during this crazy time.
And to you and yours as well. And this is Kim Munson, sounding off with Kim Munson. Thanks for listening.